Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well will be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ask the Blood Detective. My name is Dr. Michael Walden. I want to welcome you today to today's show all about probiotics. Now, if you think you know what probiotics are and what they could be used for in terms of your health, I would think again, because there is an essential role of the use of different forms of probiotics in an extremely wide variety of health problems, not just once you have those health issues, but also to help offset and prevent and delay the onset of an extreme number of health problems. I'm going to start, though, by describing what probiotics are not. You should know that probiotics are not nutrients per se. Within the context of nutritional supplementation, you know, going to a health food store, for example, and seeing different probiotics for sale, probiotics describe microorganisms that are consumed for a particular health benefit, usually to rebalance the natural gut microflora. So the term microflora refers to the organisms in the intestinal tract. And people will tend to use probiotics to rebalance the natural gut microflora and to offset things like diarrhea, gut inflammation, gas, bloating, common gastrointestinal problems. Now, you should know, and it's quite fascinating when you think about it, that these microorganisms have been part of the food chain for a millennia. Probiotics are found mostly in fermented foods. Although today, the vast majority of probiotics are consumed and added as ingredients to dairy products like yogurt, milk, kefir, or in a capsule or tablet or just powdered forms of dietary supplements. Now, I should mention now from a practical perspective that just because a probiotic is in a powdered form, either not in a capsule or in a capsule or is in a hard tablet form, that's not what determines the quality of a supplement. Because you can have a lousy quality probiotic that's in a powder, and just because it's in a powder doesn't make it any better. However, depending on the health problem, depending on the individual, choosing between a capsule, a powder, or a tablet form of probiotics could make the difference between the probiotic working or not working. Now, it's important to know that commercial probiotics, even the ones that I produce and provide to my patients on blooddetective.com are not the same thing as what are known as indigenous or commensal microflora. So the use of probiotics should not be thought of as re-inoculating or recolonizing the gut with natural bugs because, as I just said, these are microorganisms produced in a laboratory under controlled environments, and they simply are not what your body makes. But for one reason or another, and we'll describe some of the reasons throughout the course of the show, probiotics may not be made, the indigenous types of probiotics in your gut may not be made normally. And therefore, the best next thing to do is take these exogenous microorganisms that you would find in a health food store or in foods. Now, I should also say that foods, whether it's milk, yogurt, kefir, or other fermented foods, even though they may contain probiotics, does not mean that they will contain enough of the particular probiotics that an individual like you might need given a particular health problem. I find all the time the error made among some of my patients where they're confused as to why their probiotic has not worked because they've eaten the probiotic. Dose is everything. So keep that in mind as well. And I hope you're keeping notes on this because these are key clinical points that can make the difference between probiotics working for you and not working for you. Could save you years and hundreds or even thousands of dollars of wasted efforts. Another practical point for you to know is that probiotics, the ones that you take from health food stores, they typically survive up to about 2 weeks or so in the human gastrointestinal tract. And they perform a host of beneficial effects that are similar to, and by the way, I should say, sometimes completely indistinguishable from the commensal microflora. And the commensal microflora are the ones that your body makes. So there is plenty of scientific study, and I have nearly 27 years of clinical experience myself, that proves that probiotics that you buy, that you do not make yourself, can still work for you. In some cases, as well as the ones, the probiotics that your body makes, and at other times, even better. You know, what's fascinating is that the human gastrointestinal tract is a host to trillions of microorganisms, more than 350 species, in fact, of microorganisms. And these organisms provide a wide range of benefits. And they're generally classified as protective functions or structural functions or even metabolic functions. So let me say that again. Probiotics can work on general metabolic functions in the body. They can help neuromusculoskeletal health problems, and they could modify the immune system, what are known as protective functions. So protective, structural, and metabolic functions, depending on the types and amounts and ways that you administer probiotics, you can get more or less these different effects to focus on what your health goals are or current health problems are. Now, many of you, and I can tell this based on the emails you've sent me, are already aware that many of the benefits of probiotics are unrealized in context with many, many gastrointestinal and other health problems. It's just not recognized by many health practitioners out there, particularly in standard medicine, that microbial imbalance, what's known as dysbiosis, can cause a variety of health issues. I tend to think of it this way. Probiotic imbalance can be the masquerader of many diseases. You name the health problem, and probiotic imbalance could either be a cause of that health problem, or at the very least, could have resulted from that health problem. Either way, probiotics, when used correctly, are fundamental for every single one of my patient protocols. I do nothing until I fix the microbial flora. And I need to say yet again, fixing the gut is more than just popping pills or taking powders of probiotics. How you combine probiotics with other nutrients, how you might take probiotics with certain foods. For example, most probiotics like Lactobacillus acidophilus or any of the Lactobacilli species they're much more potent in the body when you take them with a protein meal. So that's another what I call clinical pearl. Something you need to know that can make the difference between probiotics working for you and not. Now, you should know that a healthy microflora is important for the production of certain vitamins, for example, a vitamin K, which we need for blood clotting, bone health, and anti-cancer effects, another B vitamin known as biotin, and also folic acid are all produced by microflora. Now, that does not mean that you will get optimal levels of vitamin K, biotin, or folate by simply taking microflora. Very small amounts of these B vitamins are produced by microflora. But in some circumstances, enough of those B vitamins could be produced that may help promote significant health changes in the short term. So, for example, if you have a high level of a blood toxin known as homocysteine, you would want to take folic acid along with some other B vitamins like B6 and B12 and also betaine. But taking a probiotic would not necessarily make enough of the active form of folic acid, so your body can lower that toxic chemical known as homocysteine, which can lower your risk of cardiovascular disease plus many other diseases. However, I should mention that there are times when the use of probiotics could make you worse, particularly when you're on certain medication. So, for example, if you're on Coumadin, an anticoagulant, an anti-sticky medication that thins the blood, and if you take probiotics at certain doses, the vitamin K produced will counteract the Coumadin or the warfarin. Those are the same medications. And if you're going to take that blood thinner, warfarin or Coumadin, you do not want to interfere with the effect of that medication by taking probiotics. However, it's thought that if you have been taking probiotics all along, and then you discover that you have a blood clotting problem, you do not stop taking those probiotics. You keep that as it was, and then you take your Coumadin or your Warfarin based upon your internist or your hematologist directions, so that your blood clotting measurement on blood testing, which is called INR, can be balanced appropriately. If you change too many dynamics at once, for example, you take Warfarin and then you stop taking your probiotic, and then sometimes doctors even tell you to stop eating all green leafy vegetables because of their vitamin K content, you might create a real mess in terms of figuring out what's doing what. Now, microflora also have the potential of improving the absorption of a variety of minerals. Probiotics also help the fermentation, the breakdown of some dietary fibers into some very important chemicals known as short-chain fatty acids. So short-chain fatty acids are something produced as probiotics grow in your intestinal tract, and these short-chain fatty acids are needed to improve the repair and what's known as the turnover, the intestinal cell turnover of the cells themselves that line the gastrointestinal tract. So we've already discussed now that probiotics can, number one, interfere with certain medications, both positively and negatively. Probiotics might be enhanced in their use when taken with proteins, particularly whey protein, by the way. And probiotics also, among other things, increase a very important chemical which helps the repair of the intestinal tract and reduce leaky gut, which is a breakdown in the intestinal tract known as short-chain fatty acids. And they're often abbreviated SCFAs, by the way. Now, it's very important to recognize that when you want to improve your body's production, its own natural production of probiotics in the gut, you wouldn't simply want to think of taking probiotics, although that seems pretty self-evident. You'd want to also consider taking fiber. So with my patients, I always provide a form of fiber, which I call Fiber Complete, which contains a certain balance of what are known as soluble fibers, along with a proprietary blend of specific types of those fibers from the fig and prunes and apple pectin, rice bran, psyllium husk and psyllium husk seed. All of that, particularly when they're in the organic form, I believe, are the best way to go in terms of providing probiotics a source of bulk that the probiotic tries to digest. And in its attempts to break down fiber, the probiotics produce those very important short-chain fatty acids. You should know, too, that low levels of short-chain fatty acids in the gastrointestinal tract are associated with increased risk of inflammatory bowel diseases, like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis and proctitis, and also, of course, a colon cancer. Now, those four conditions are extreme, but then there are many other variations of intestinal gut problems, which are sometimes given no name in medicine, but they can potentially benefit from the use of probiotics and the probiotic synergists like fiber. I should mention a few other important things. Something that you almost never hear about is how the right balance of probiotics help to convert what are called phytonutrients. So those are nutrients that you'll find, for example, in my detox powdered or superfood products, detox 1, 2, 3, and 4. And essentially, what those products are high concentrates of dehydrated plant products. Now, you've heard about all of these different types of beneficial compounds in plants. These compounds are contained in, for example, sunflower and spirulina and barley grass and carrots and papain, red grape seed, chlorella, red raspberries, apple pectin. The list goes on and on and on. The point that's important for everyone here to get is that it's not ideal to just take food concentrates of superfoods or to eat lots of plant products. You want to do that, no doubt. But you also, in my opinion, want to increase your intake of probiotics because the probiotics help convert many of the compounds in those plants into their what are known as their bioactive forms. One example of a bioactive form of a very important plant product that has been shown to benefit all manner of inflammation, immunity, tissue repair, hormone balance, immunity, you name it, are isoflavones. That's just one example. I need to emphasize that when you eat something, and the body has to absorb it, of course, but it has to also convert those compounds to active forms. So probiotics help do that. Another very practical point is that the commercially prepared probiotics, like the ones that I make called Superbugs Colonize SI for small intestine, and also Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a healthy yeast, these types of probiotics, they do not, I repeat, they do not become permanent members of your gut. But they do often perform some of the very same biological functions. And very importantly, they help create a gastrointestinal environment that favors what's known as commensal balance. You want the balance of the intestinal milieu so that your intestinal tract is not leaky, your immune system and your small intestine functions properly. And by the way, your small intestine contains approximately 70 to 80% of your immune system. Many clinical trials and my experience over the course of the last few decades have shown that the probiotic-induced changes in the gut microenvironment have far-reaching health consequences. And I mentioned some of the conditions in which they might help, like the inflammatory bowel diseases, also irritable bowel syndrome, any number of atopic problems like skin conditions, just generalized bowel irregularity, candida overgrowth, upper respiratory tract infections, immune suppression, and many more problems. So from a practical perspective, I would advise, and I do advise my clients to take a form of probiotic that contains several lactobacilli cousins, so to speak, like Lactobacillus acidophilus, Lactobacillus rhamnosus, Lactobacillus parkasei, and others, but also together with at least two forms of what are known as bifidobacterium, such as Bifidobacterium bifidum and Bifidobacterium lactis. I combine these in a single capsule that has 100 billion count of these bugs. This is a pretty good beginning therapeutic dose for most health problems. I will always combine my Superbug Colonize SI product with healthy fungal organisms because fungal overgrowth, particularly when it's on a level that is not recognized by general medicine, in other words, there's no formalized diagnosis of fungal infection, can benefit from daily intake of Saccharomyces boulardii. Now, it's my opinion that the minimum dose of Saccharomyces boulardii should be 5 billion. The 5 billion count should be in what's known as CFUs, which is just the unit of count for the bugs. Both Saccharomyces boulardii and my Superbugs Colonize probiotics do not require refrigeration because they're highly stable. Their pharmacologic doses of probiotics, and they're synergistic. They work very well together. Now, if a person has one or more diagnoses that is felt could be related, either caused from or resulting in probiotic imbalance, I might, of course, increase the dose of probiotics at this point. Another very practical point is that I will often combine probiotics with what's known as a non-essential amino acid known as L-glutamine. Now, I will use a powdered form because L-glutamine is best in a powdered form. I'll usually give a beginning dose of just under 7 grams or 7,000 milligrams. That's about one scoop of my L-glutamine. And what L-glutamine does is it helps to create a fundamentally basic or I should say fundamentally repaired environment of the gut, because glutamine is the most abundant, first of all, it's the most abundant amino acid in the body. And it is the primary fuel source for the enterocytes, which are known as the intestinal cells of the gut, to reproduce themselves. Visualize this. The better or more effectively the intestinal cells reproduce themselves, the more capable they'll be of offsetting leaky gut syndrome, which is just a descriptive term of lack of repair. And you've got extra space between cells, which results in the leakiness. Glutamine also helps modify the immune system. It's even used in hospitals, in the ICUs, which help reduce death rates, morbidity, and mortality in ICU units. But like so many things typical in medicine, some of these natural approaches are used at the end stage of disease. But even there, they've been shown to be of extreme use. There's not a person I can think of that would probably not benefit from additional glutamine. Now, the amount of glutamine is best determined based on what's known as a body composition, because a body composition is a test that lets me learn your metabolic rate. If I know your metabolic rate and I know your percentage of lean muscle, I can help. That helps me calculate the amount of glutamine. But glutamine is also based on just symptomatic improvement. So once again, just to recap, I'll start with just under 7 grams of powdered glutamine, and I'll also mix the glutamine with a small amount of vitamin A and zinc, as well as something known as N-acetyl-D glucosamine and aloe vera, which I get from the leaf gel extract, and also what's known as deglycerinated licorice. All of those products are in my L-glutamine powder, and they're meant to promote the healthy mucociliary membrane, which lines the entirety of the intestinal tract. Now, this membrane, by the way, and I hope you're listening, this membrane, this mucociliary immune blanket, as it's called, contains a very important immune compound known as immunoglobulin A. Now, immunoglobulin A is the first line of immune defense in the gut, and people who have issues with probiotics and nutrient deficiencies and malabsorption or any kind of chronic health problem whatsoever, they may require more immunoglobulin A. Now, immunoglobulin A is made from immunoglobulin G. It's better to take immunoglobulin G by mouth than it is to take immunoglobulin A to fix immunoglobulin A levels in the mucociliary blanket. So in English, what that means is that I would advise my patients to always take immunoglobulin G, which you'll find in high concentrations in colostrum concentrate. And what's two is that colostrum contains lactoferrin. And lactoferrin is also extremely important for immune modulation. So I'll start most people with 4 capsules of my immunoglobulin G, because that gives an amount of immunoglobulin G of about 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram in 4 capsules. That is a therapeutic dose. Now, I keep repeating the term therapeutic dose because it is very interesting to me that I find that, number one, some individuals will take the right dose, the right type, I should say, of immunoglobulin G. They'll take the right forms and combinations of probiotics and Saccharomyces boulardii and fiber and glutamine, but they will draw conclusions about how they've affected them in periods of time that are far too short to make any difference. In other words, the placebo effect kicks in. You should know that probiotics, as I mentioned earlier, as an example, stay in the gut for about 2 weeks only. So it's very important that you continue to take them your whole life, basically, if you have chronic health problems. Now, if that doesn't sound too appealing to you, of course, you can experiment and reduce the intake of your probiotics and to see that, you know, maybe you wouldn't need as much probiotic. But I do believe that every person should be taking probiotics along with these nutritional synergists, particularly making sure that they have the right dose of glutamine, or at least the minimum dose of glutamine, which I said earlier was about 6.9 grams, just under 7 grams, 1 gram is 1,000 milligrams, so that's just under 7,000 milligrams of glutamine. Glutamine, getting back to glutamine for a second, modifies and balances the immune system, but it also offsets what's known as sarcopenia. Now, sarcopenia is a fancy term for loss of lean organ mass. You know, picture an elderly person. They will lose lean organ mass. They will literally shrink. They will atrophy. That is the loss of lean organ mass. The more atrophy that happens, that is aging. And many of us age extremely rapidly, and we will have more sarcopenia or more exaggerated loss of lean organ mass. The lean organ mass, folks, is what produces all the blood work that your doctors talk about, what I talk about as a blood detective. So if you improve all of your blood work, but you do not improve your lean organ mass, you have not optimized your morbidity and mortality decrease. In other words, if you want to live longer and better, that is associated with an increase in lean organ mass, and glutamine helps to promote lean organ mass. But so does immunoglobulin G, probiotics like those in superbugs, probiotic antifungals like those in Saccharomyces boulardii. Very essential for overall morbidity and mortality reduction. It's not enough to just feel better. You want to feel better and make sure you actually are improving what I call as a blood detective biomarkers. Those are tests and evaluations that start to peel away, statistically speaking, your disease risk and your loss of quality of life. Some of the biomarkers, one of them I've already said, is a body composition test. Also, hardness of arteries is a biomarker, loss of elasticity of blood vessels and the lungs. Cholesterol, homocysteine, C-reactive protein, hemoglobin A1C. You know, I should probably back up for a minute and talk about, you know, where probiotics come from in the body. You know, healthy bacteria reach the GI tract from the environment, meaning outside of the body of a baby, starting at birth, influenced by the mode of delivery and whether or not a child is breastfed, an effect of, you know, both breast milk and contact with the mother's breast. So after that, organisms in the soil, the food and water continue to create an individual's or your unique population of those commensal probiotic organisms. Now, we all know that probiotics are detrimentally impacted by the use of antibiotics or gastrointestinal conditions that alter greatly what's known as bowel transit time. So chronic constipation and frequent diarrhea will offset and will result from imbalanced probiotic organisms. This is why I will always assess what's known as bowel transit time. I will have my patients take 6 specially prepared charcoal capsules, which is a form of active charcoal, after they've had a bowel movement. So they'll record the time of the bowel movement. They'll take these 6 capsules, and then they'll observe their subsequent bowel movements to see which one is the most black. The charcoal is not absorbed, and it will act as sort of a tracer, letting me know how quickly foods move from north to south in the body. Now, I need to point out something that I often say to people. Half of the people just don't get what I'm saying. So try to get this part because it's important. Just because you have a bowel movement every day or even more than once a day does not mean that you have appropriate and normal and optimal transit time. Think of your gut as a tube that's at an angle from high to low, like a seesaw, and think of it filled with dirt, which would be stool. If you put in food at the top, the high end, that will force food that's already at the bottom end out. But how long it takes for the food at the top to get to the bottom end is your transit time. Transit time should normally be between 11 and 18 hours. If it's too long, there are a whole host of health problems associated with that. And if its transit time is too short or too quick, then that also is associated with health problems. 11 to 18 hours is the range that I use. to assess someone's baseline bowel transit time. Then, among other things, I will start, unless there's a reason not to, by having my patients take a form of buffered powdered vitamin C that I've formulated called Detox Eliminate. It is highly alkalinized. Now, once the bowel transit time test that I just described with the charcoal is performed, I have the person take a level teaspoon of the buffered powdered vitamin C in the form of Detox Eliminate every 30 minutes once it's dissolved in 1 to 2 ounces of water. Any more than that will generally cause a lot of bloating and gas and cramping, which, by the way, will go away eventually, but it's uncomfortable for some people. A certain amount of cramping and or gas is normal when you take vitamin C powder. So you would take a level teaspoon of the buffered vitamin C powder, the Detox Eliminate, every 30 minutes until you have diarrhea. Then you stop. You have just saturated your system. You have just contracted your intestinal tract. You've lost probably pounds of undigested food products. The average individual at age 50 has approximately 5 pounds of undigested, badly fermented and overly fermented food products in their gut. Then, from that test, the amount of vitamin C that someone needs daily, at least at the start, is 75% of that amount. So, we just described a procedure for using charcoal and Detox Eliminate to set the stage for a healthy gut environment into which you should then think of putting glutamine, Saccharomyces boulardii, that's a hard word even for me to pronounce sometimes, and probiotics. If you put these, the same thing with glutamine, if you put the glutamine and the probiotics in first, you will waste a lot of them unless you clean out your bowel. Now, a colon cleanse is not the same. It's not effective. It's not nearly as desirable as using buffered powdered vitamin C, because the buffered C, again, the Detox Eliminate product, will teach the colon, the muscular layers of the colon, there are two muscular layers of the colon, to contract like any exercise. When you do a bowel cleansing, you actually are doing the opposite. You're stretching out the bowel wall. You make it weaker. Not only that, you remove all of your commensal, your naturally formed probiotics in your gut. And you can strip your intestinal tract of much of the mucociliary blanket that I discussed earlier. You can put all the tea leaves, herbs, and probiotics back in you'd like through a tube inserted in the rectum once you've had colon cleansing. But you have the potential of creating an artificially clean environment, one that is very susceptible to inflammation and damage and leaky gut. Now you might say, well, that's not my experience. I've had colon cleanses. I feel great after them. Well, anyone who believes in them might feel great after doing something that they believe in, but that does not mean it's the best thing for you to do. A person might feel wonderful after they take a high dose of prednisone, a steroid, but clearly we all can agree, particularly people listening to this show, that there's a big difference between removing symptoms, feeling better, and actually being better. There is no way that healthy probiotic supplementation and cleaning out the intestinal tract with vitamin C is not more desirable than a colon cleanse, meaning a colonoscopy. I would direct some of you to listen to the show that I did called Detox Deception, within which I review a lot of the so-called elimination and detox protocols and suggestions and methods out there, which ones work and which ones do not. Now, probiotics that you purchase, like mine or any others, like commensal organisms, the probiotics your body makes, commercially available probiotic strains, also, just like the natural ones that are in your body, have their origins from one of the environmental sources that I named above. In other words, when a baby is born and they're exposed to breast milk or even the bacteria on the breast itself, introduction of certain foods and water, that's where the bugs come from. They go into the intestinal tract, and then through the innate intelligence of the body, the appropriate balance of commensal probiotic organisms are developed in the gut, which then hopefully lead to health and all of that. So the same thing is true of the store-bought probiotics. They also come from the very same sources. So some of those sources are plants, soil, dairy, or directly from the human gastrointestinal tract itself. All of those sources can be used to make commercially purchased or purchasable probiotics. Now, the origin of certain strains of probiotics, however, does not necessarily determine the benefit of the probiotic, meaning that there's no one better source of a probiotic necessarily than another source. Now, it's taken me years to choose and develop the combinations of different probiotic formulas that I use. So you need to know, in order to be a commercially and therapeutically viable, you know, product or combination of strains, the isolates must withstand what's known as large-scale fermentation and stability upon the freeze-drying process during production. If they're not stable, it doesn't matter the count of the probiotics that it says on the bottle. So many people say to me, Dr. Wald, why should I take your probiotic when the count of the bugs right here on the bottle, see, it's not as high? Think of it this way. You might be taking probiotics that have a higher number, but think of them as if you can hit them over the head with a little hammer. They're all knocked out. They can't really perform their function. So inactive probiotics, no matter how high the number, are not as effective, nearly so, as lower numbers. And the numbers that I use are not low by any means, but lower numbers of active strains. Now, it is also essential that probiotics are formulated so that they have great shelf stability. Because again, even if you start out with active bugs and very resilient organisms, but if they die after 2 weeks on the shelf, that's a problem. So you cannot go by counting of the number of organisms. You have to know if the product has gone through the correct processing. Another important characteristic of probiotics is that they need to have the ability to withstand stomach acid, bile, and enzyme digestion by enzymes like pancreatin and pepsin. The probiotic strains that I use have been tested extensively in scientific studies to be stable in the face of stomach acid and enzymes. Not all probiotics can withstand that environment. It's important that they can, because the way that the body naturally works is that probiotics are exposed in the intestinal tract and the stomach to stomach acid and enzymes. That's why I'll almost always either combine at the same time or time the supplementation of both enzymes and stomach acid. You know, when you eat food, your foods go into your stomach, right? And then your stomach makes, your stomach lining, the what are called the parietal or chief cells, they make stomach acid. There are a small amount of acidophilus bugs in the intestinal, I'm sorry, in the stomach normally. Now, if your body makes the appropriate stomach acid, the environment of the stomach is normal. Then that normalcy of the stomach lends itself or contributes to the healthy environment of the next part of the gut that receives food, which is the small intestine. If the food that enters the small intestine in your body from your stomach has been properly acted upon with stomach acid, like betaine HCl, then when the food enters the small intestine, it's friendly to the small intestine, and then what are known as neurohormonal and psychological signals will trigger the proper balance and release of pancreatic enzymes from the pancreas into and through a tube that goes right into the small intestine, and also bile. And bile is made by the liver, which is emptied into the gallbladder, which then goes to another tube called a common bile duct into the small intestine, exactly at the spot where the pancreas secretes its enzymes being protein, carbohydrate, and fat-digesting enzymes. The point of all of this is for you to just appreciate maybe a little bit more than you had before the wonderfully orchestrated digestive process that is absolutely fundamental for establishing and reestablishing a normal intestinal microflora. If you take all the probiotics in the world and you do not balance your stomach acid need and your enzyme need and your bile acids, you will not benefit nearly as much. So again, when I see people that have done a very nice job of probiotic supplementation, but they were either not aware that they have low stomach acid, known as hypochlorhydria, or no stomach acid at all, which is called achlorhydria, and or they were unaware that they did not, their pancreas did not, has lost the capacity to produce a certain amount of protein, carbohydrate, and fat-digesting enzymes. They've simply wasted their time. So I will do pancreatic enzyme assessments and stomach acid assessments, along with some home tests, two of which I mentioned before, known as the charcoal transit time test, and then the vitamin C loading test. I didn't use that term before, but that is the term regarding how I described you take detox eliminate, which is buffered vitamin C, at a level teaspoon every 30 minutes until you get diarrhea. Remember that? So all of this together is part of a comprehensive intestinal and gut approach for health. Now, another fact that is not really discussed much, that I don't ever recalling it being heard on a radio show, is that commercial growth of probiotics in the gut does not last. That's number one. And one of the reasons it does not last is because when you're also working on other aspects of gut health, like through glutamine and stomach acid assessment and need and supplementation and pancreatic enzyme supplementation, the body will naturally want to limit the probiotics that you're taking in a supplement form. And you might say, well, what's the point? Why? What's that about? Think of it this way. The body is so innately intelligent that by limiting the length of time that certain store-bought forms of probiotics either survive in the intestinal tract, and this is important, the innate intelligence of the body can also limit the numbers of the different types of probiotics that you're taking in supplement form. That's because in different areas of your gastrointestinal tract, there should be different numbers, types, and lifespans of these probiotics. That is a key point. I've seen people use high doses of probiotics, the right probiotics, pharmaceutical-grade probiotics, and flood their guts for too long a period of time and wonder why they're taking the greatest probiotics and their health issues are not resolving. When you do not pay attention to other aspects or other contributors to the intestinal tract's health, like, again, stomach acid, enzymes, bile, mucociliary blanket, immunoglobulin G, glutamine, fiber supplementation, the addition of powerful superfoods like my detox 1, 2, 3, and 4. 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are food concentrates of different plant elements, then it's sort of like dealing with one piece of a pie. And we obviously want to think holistically and deal with the whole pie. I should emphasize that determining or balancing your intestinal tract's pH or acid-base balance is crucial, not just for a probiotic function, but for any function throughout any area of the body. Now, many of you are thinking, yes, pH, we should be alkaline. No, 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 no. We should be alkaline and we should be acid where we need to be alkaline and acid. We should be, and I've said this in my show on everything digestion, we should be alkaline in our mouths so that the enzyme there called amylase can break down starch so it's received properly in the intestinal tract lower down. The stomach and stomach acid helps ensure that the stomach remains in its pH of between about 3 and 6. On average, it varies, but on the acid end, and our large intestine, slightly acid, our small intestine, mostly alkaline, our urine on the acid side. So this concept of we should be alkaline, it makes no sense. It is a generalization that is clearly just wrong. And with all generalizations in practically every area of life, they get us into trouble. So I only care about individuals. As a blood detective, I want to know your blood pH. I want to know your intestinal function. I want to know if you have leakiness. I want to know if you have malabsorption. So I will do tests of malabsorption of certain amino acids in the small intestine. If you malabsorb, let's say due to lack of stomach acid, you must take stomach acid. And that the amount of that needs to be determined. And then if you have a certain amount of stomach acid, you need to complement that with the right amount of pancreatic enzymes or maybe bile acids and or probiotics. Again, I think you get the concept. Now, sometimes I will go from using what is a multi-strain approach of probiotic supplementation, like I mentioned my Superbugs product, which has six different types of species, two different types of species, but six different forms of two different types of species of probiotics. And then over time, and depending on your response or your health issues, specific probiotics help specific conditions. Let me go through a couple of practical myths, facts, and some ideas that I have that you probably won't hear anywhere else other than on Ask the Blood Detective. So these are some of the questions that you folks, have given me through the email that suggested this particular show's topic, so I appreciate that. Should one rotate different probiotic strains? Now, there's all kinds of thought and theory out there among practitioners whether or not we should rotate between different types of strains, believing that the use of only one strain, for example, might limit the overall benefit of another strain, example. The figuring this out must be based on the individual through trial and error. And trial and error isn't a response in 2, 3, 5, or 10 days. So that's what I can say about that. There's no general rule about should you use just one type of bug or another. I generally find that most people, and you may not be most people, require a variety of probiotics. The amounts, doses, and combinations must be based on not only your diagnoses, but your chemistry and how you respond. So yes, it's not the easiest thing in the world to figure out what works for you, but that's all I'm interested in. So what's the right dose of probiotics? Now, probiotic doses are expressed as colony-forming units. I said it earlier. I talked about CFUs, colony-forming units. Essentially, this means that when the product is prepared appropriately during the laboratory enumeration, when they count up these bugs, the dose of the probiotics will yield a number of live, what they call colony-forming organisms in the laboratory. And since these bugs, these organisms, are specially prepared by a freeze-drying process, and many organisms, as I mentioned before, could be damaged beyond their ability to become alive again, this is the best method that is known for counting up the probiotic potential of a product that you buy. So if your product does not use the terminology CFU, you probably should not use it. Now, another question is, do probiotics need to be refrigerated? Are there shelf life issues? In other words, do these things die if you leave them without refrigeration? Well, depending on the process of production, like my probiotics, they do not require refrigeration. But I would say in general, since you may not know the quality of the probiotics you're taking, and there's no way you can know unless you get what's known as a full disclosure label of the processing and the viability of the bugs, I would say refrigerate them. Now, just going back for a second, I want to just clarify the technology that I insist upon for the probiotics that I use. So, probiotic manufacturers, they've been developing a number of technologies to improve the stability of probiotics for years. And this includes the initial, first of all, strain selection. You know, what's the best strain of the bug? the what's known as the medium used to grow the bacteria, the harvesting process of the bugs, and also the steps used to put these microorganisms into a freeze-dried state of essentially suspended animation. Now, there are companies that pay very little attention to all of these details, and they're the only thing that they survive upon is their advertising, convincing the public that they have viable strains when they do not. So these particular steps are used to protect the bacteria from harsh processes of freeze drying. So their cell membranes, their DNA, their cellular metabolites, they're undamaged. And that allows the cells to sort of wake up again when they enter your gut or reanimate. So when they reach the appropriate gut environment, and I mentioned before, if you don't have the appropriate gut environment, if you have leaky gut and you have inadequate bile acid secretion, which affects the small intestine environment, and you have ineffective enzyme output, which will affect your stomach, your small intestine environment, and you don't make enough betaine hydrochloride, which affects your stomach environment, then this reanimation process will not take place or will be very, very limited. So without these processes, room temperature stability would be very short and with a probiotic, which means, like I said, refrigerate it. Now, some of you have asked a very advanced question, and it is this: do probiotics need to have a capsule around them, or do they need to be coated with what's known as an enteric coat? So the answer, first of all, is no. Most studies that reveal that the benefits of the of microorganisms that are properly prepared were done using what's known as non-enteric coated finished products, which means you do not have to have a coat around the probiotic that protects it from the stomach acid. There's actually a reanimation that takes place when probiotics are exposed to normal stomach acid of the stomach. But if you are the average individual, 50 and over, you have inadequate stomach acid environment, and you will not get proper reanimation of these probiotics. Again, I'm seeing, based on my email stream now, that you're all understanding this, asking some more very interesting questions. So let me answer a couple more of them. Should probiotics be taken with food or on an empty stomach? All I can tell you is what I've seen. There's basically one study that really tried to clarify this, but the problem with studies is, even if the studies were used on people, these people are not you. So as you know, we need to figure out how you would respond to the proper balance of all of these things that I've mentioned. And really, it's as simple as that. You know, what makes science so complicated, you know, people are always saying to me, Dr. Wald, how do you keep straight all of the differences of opinion in the studies on the use of probiotics and prebiotics and all these other synergists that you're talking about? It's so confusing. How do we know what to believe in? Well, the reason why this is all very complicated, I believe, and why it all is, some of it is very conflicting, is that's what happens when you base data on the law of averages. You know, you take 100 people, you give them a placebo, like a sugar pill, a fake thing, and then you take another 100 people, which is the study group, which you're giving the probiotic in this case, and then you're comparing the two groups. Now, 100 average people will come up with some average suggestion, but the average woman and average man have never walked in my office because there's no such thing. So the very model of the scientific study based on the law of averages is inherently limited. I'm not saying it's valueless. It's certainly not valueless. It's a starting point, yes. Is it a final point? No. What I care about, as I've said a few times, is how each individual responds to an intelligent combination of all of the things that that person may need. You know, think about this. This is so key. It's so key. If you have a study, which I just described, where you're giving the placebo or the sugar pill to, let's say, 100 people, and you're giving the probiotic to another 100 people and comparing the two groups, and you come up with some conclusion. And let's say, for argument's sake, that that study was controlled properly. It was double-blinded. It was placebo-controlled, as this one I described was. Everything, all the criteria that science would say was perfect, was done. The study is still practically applied to an individual. And you know this. For example, did that study mention anything about glutamine or stomach acid or enzymes? What types of probiotics did they use? What amounts? Did they take them with foods? Did they not? The amount of controversy is, it shouldn't be unexpected. It should be expected. I would be shocked if all of these studies on probiotics agreed. They do not agree because they're not based on individuals. And this is a basic problem in traditional scientific circles, is that practitioners forget that studies are not based on individuals, and then they apply the knowledge to each person. So they read a study and they say, okay, it said that you should take this probiotic, but maybe this probiotic is not the appropriate one for depression. Maybe it's not the appropriate probiotic that enhances fat burning. Maybe it's not the appropriate probiotic that's best for your cancer or your inflammatory bowel disease. Are you getting the picture here? That's why holistic methods and what I consider the blood detective method, where I'm looking at a multitude of individual parameters for each person to figure things out over time, makes the most natural sense. It's really common sense when you think about it, but the problem with common sense is, well, you guessed it, it ain't that common. So having said that, the next several shows, as all of my shows have been, are about how you, as your own personal blood detective, can figure out what your needs are. Your needs will change over time. Should you have guidance with someone like me? Of course you should, at least to get things going and then to check in with you, because if you just go by how you're feeling, many people feel good until they do not feel good. So it's important to look a little deeper. That's why I've put together blood detective investigations and perspectives and questionnaires that look at the entire individual's as completely as possible. Because even the greatest effort to do that, although still limited, you can't look at everything. I know that, and I can guarantee you that. But it's still better than the limited scientific, double-blinded, placebo-controlled perspective that I just described. Now, as someone who has had and earned an MD degree and a chiropractic degree and a master's in science and a doctorate in nutrition, and I'm a dietitian, all these different things, I am interested in pulling information from as many places as possible so that I can remove as much as my inherent bias, because everyone has bias in terms of approaching people. Yes, my bias is do things as naturally as possible. So thank you again for hanging in there with me for this conversation on probiotics. I do hope it was useful. The next show is all about nutritional vitamin and mineral and herbal supplements. We're going to talk about the gender differences between men and women of how nutrients are used, how children use nutrients very different than adults. And I'll be comparing and contrasting natural vitamin functions to synthetics and foods versus supplements, which are better. I'll be talking more about the active and what are known as provitamin forms of nutrients. I'll be talking about whole food supplementation. Lots of wonderful concepts that you will find that will make the difference in your health efforts. I'll guarantee you that. So for those of you again who joined us, my name is Dr. Michael Wald. You're listening to Ask the Blood Detective. Join me next week, Saturdays at 1 o'clock, every Saturday at 1 o'clock, during which I'll describe all different topics that will help you think, help you become more of your own blood detective. For those of you who'd like to work with me directly, you can call me at 914-242-8844. Emailing is also great. I'll contact you immediately and personally. My email is info@blooddetective.com. That's info@blooddetective.com. And if you'd like to visit my website, I have dozens of videos and lots of radio shows and tons of written content, you can go to www.integratednutritionny.com. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll talk to you soon. Too late.